The president just returned from his first G7 summit. What does it mean for America's global clout?
We highlight and break down the Trump budget proposal with Scott Moore.
And we'll talk the cost of drug prices in America and what we think can be done. It's Tuesday, May 30th. Welcome to Political Culture.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Political Culture.
Hey guys, welcome to Black Hollywood Live's Political Culture. I'm your host, Drexel Hurd. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and pretty much everywhere at Drexel Hurd.
And I am at Chelsea Galicia. Wait, no, I should have said I am Chelsea Galicia at Chelsea Galicia. I should probably get that straight at some point. But it's because I'm really excited to introduce our guest, one of my favorite fellow After Buzzers and co-hosts of The Trump Report. We have Scott Moore.
Hey,
with
Mr.
Us.
Hey. Scott Moore.
S-Man 80.
Hey, guys. Yeah, so good to be back.
Welcome back.
Thank
to
you.
Political. This is the first time you've been on the show with me and Chelsea.
Yes. Combined. Combining forces.
Oh, no.
Yes, this is very exciting.
And
so
today
thank you for
we have him for one of my favorite Scott skills. Numbers and stats and history. Mm-hmm. And he's like a walking encyclopedia of politics.
Yeah, if you guys watched Election Night with us a few months ago, you know that Scott knows how the numbers, and we're going to break it down, and we're going to talk about all that in a little bit. Be sure to follow AfterBuzz TV at AfterBuzz TV, and follow us on Twitter at ABTV Polyculture. Just before we break down some of the things that we talked about in the intro, a couple of breaking news things of the day. The White House Communications Director, Mike Dubik,
Dubke? Sounds a little too close for Dubke for
resigned, making Sean Spicer the de facto communications director. I don't know.
Well,
about
he was that before
right.
this guy
well,
came on.
This guy
right, and now he's
came
going
on in
back.
March. Yeah,
right.
he was only on for two and a half months.
Workers investigating the Chinese factories that make Ivanka Trump's shoes are currently missing. Or they've been arrested, so we're going to be following a little bit of what's happening there. Just got the AP breaking mobile that Donald Trump has been asking world leaders to call his cell phone. Mm-hmm. So I don't know
and
how secure that is.
The news that just came out that Flynn has agreed to turn over
some documents. Mm-hmm. See,
it's going to be nothing.
It's going to be absolutely nothing because why would he protect? Like, if he doesn't get immunity, he's not giving us the big fish. And one thing that I want to get your opinions on, Kathy Griffin is taking some heat.
Yeah.
For a photo of her hypothetically beheading Donald Trump. I think it was in a cartoony
yes.
type thing. Mm-hmm. Real quick, what do you guys think about that?
Huh, this is a little deja vu, because
yeah.
we've talked about this, and what I have to say about it is that I don't want to say anything about it, because I don't know, it's asking for attention that
I
don't want to give it.
And it's basically, that's what it's for attention. I get free speech, and I'm a supporter of it. I didn't like when people were doing that with Obama, as I talked about before, too, with the noose and the hangings of Obama and the way they treated him. I don't necessarily like it, even though I can't stand Trump, but I also agree with free speech, and she's doing it for attention.
Right.
And she's getting the attention that she wanted because people were talking about it.
Chelsea Clinton had a very pointed response on Twitter saying something like, you know, how disgusting it was and all that stuff. So,
Kathy Griffin was probably like,
yes, exactly. Right. I'm getting all this attention. Of course it's disgusting. That's exactly what I wanted people to do is get
that's
all crazy
shock value.
About it. Exactly.
So let's talk about the G7 summit, because we don't talk a lot about foreign policy on this show. Mm-hmm. It's mostly focused on domestic policy. But this is the first time that the president has gone overseas.
Mm-hmm.
We talked last week about his
trip. You know what I feel like Scott could do for us right now? The G7. Tell us about the G7. Like, we're like, he went to the G7. And some people who are just starting to follow politics now because of this administration, may not even really know, like, what is the G7? And are probably too embarrassed to ask because we all use that term, like, doesn't everybody
G7.
Know?
Well, I was going to say, it's speaking of his first foreign trip, it's actually one of the latest for a president to take their first foreign trip. Going back to Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter actually went just a few weeks earlier in the same time period in May. So Trump has already started and he's never been precedence to other, you know, way other things have been handled, but he has taken one of the latest trips ever for a modern foreign president.
Where would you ever hear that except for Scott?
but the G7 is basically the seven biggest economies in a sense.
To be the G8.
Back
in my day.
Back in my day.
When Russia
used to be. But it wasn't until 2014 that Russia The world powers are like, we can't deal with Russia anymore, so goodbye, Russia. You're not a part of the G.
So it's essentially the seven biggest powerful economies of the world.
This year it was held in Italy. Mm-hmm. The theme was Sicily. Yes. Or what did it say last week? Taramina? Taramina?
No say. I know Spanish, not Italian. Yeah.
So the theme this year was building the foundations of renewed trust. So just to kind of piggyback on what Scott was saying, just about who is a part of this G7, so the people understand. Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the United States, the United Kingdom, and the European Union. And then there's guest invitee nations, I guess, every year.
Right. The European Union is more of the entity in total because obviously the individual countries don't necessarily line up, but them as a block participate.
The guest invitees were all African nations this year. Mm-hmm. So Ethiopia, Guinea, Kenya, Niger, Nigeria, and Tunisia. So they put everybody together. What did you guys think of Donald Trump's first meeting of the... of the world leaders?
Well, the first thing that I want to say, almost for shock value equivalent to Kathy Griffin, is I'm going to start off by defending Trump on something.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. So I was going to say, I hope it's his last, but that's shock value.
That I saw news coverage about Trump's failure to have on the headpiece to hear the Italian leader speak.
Yeah, the translations that they do. Yeah,
and so it seemed that Trump was being very disrespectful because everybody had the headset on except him, which means that he wasn't listening, except that was inaccurate, and he did have an earpiece in, but he just uses a much smaller one that's not so noticeable.
He didn't want to mess up his hair.
which is interesting because I was reading an article one day about how Donald Trump uses a different microphone when he's doing his speeches than pretty much any other president. Yes. Most presidents use the dual speakers. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump uses, I don't know, based on like the sound, like it's like something.
I know, should ask my audio guys how it works, but.
But it's basically one big mic that carries his voice further than the dual mics normally would have, which it always makes it look like it's cutting half of his face off instead of it down here. So that's just a little like behind the scenes tidbit, but
it is a big thing because when you think about it, they take that podium with them on Air Force One, so wherever they go, and so that's a mic that's changed for everything they use away and at the White House. So it is a big deal, but one of those interesting little facts behind that. But it is a big deal because the last few presidents have used the dual mics.
Apparently, he wanted that during the debates too.
Yes, he did.
It was a mic thing during the debates
too. But I think we didn't quite get to your question about how we think.
Yeah, how he did. I always think he's embarrassing. So, I mean, maybe I'm the wrong person to ask that because it's hard for me to step back. You know, I think some of the I know he's trying to reset some of the things that were happening during the Obama administration, but in a way he's isolating a lot of Europe with the things that he wants to do. And I think that's not going to help us out as Americans in the long run. I know it's like the America First policy, and a lot of people, especially in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia and Israel, like, yes, we understand that, you know, it's the America First policy kind of things. So of course, he's going to look after America's interests first. And we're not saying that we're not putting America's interests first. But as someone who's, again, a businessman that's supposed to be there to help with the compromising and negotiating the best deals, it doesn't seem like he's doing that by already isolating Europe so much and basically saying they're not paying their fair share with NATO and they're not, you know, Germany with the trade deficits. That's not how you go and help with positive relationship building.
So I think that this deserves some explanation. That Trump is upset that most of the NATO nations have not paid in 2% of their GDP. And my understanding is that that is a guideline.
Right.
But that he has taken it very literally.
Yes.
And is very upset with any country that has fallen below that.
Mm-hmm.
And then feels like the United States has to pick up the slack.
Right.
Is that accurate?
It is accurate to some degree, and yes, and that is one thing that I could say, yes, I can understand where he's coming from, but to put them on the spot to say they're not doesn't help with the relationship building.
He was like, well, maybe it should be 3%.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. It was all like, this is what they hoped people would do, because it's a 70-year-old establishment. This is what they hoped it would be. And, of course, we're in a much different environment than we were 70 years ago as far as what GDP was and what countries were able to contribute. Now we're at a much different level. And same thing, you know, 2% of our GDP. That's
a
big amount.
From a fair if we're talking about why Donald Trump feels that way, why is it? And maybe we just don't, why is it? Do you guys think that the United States pays more than other nations when it comes to NATO?
Well, I think maybe this is a little cynical, but there is a big war military. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Business here in the United States.
There is.
So we budget a lot towards military spending, and contractors and such, they need to spend all that they are allotted so that the next year they can go back and ask for more. So I think that the way that we incentivize contractors and the way our budget is incentivizes people to spend. And our businesses here, some of them here in California, benefit from building these weapons, and there's a whole business to it, that perhaps other countries don't benefit from the same that we do. So we are a little more incentivized to spend on.
We are. There is that, and like you said, the military-industrial complex is a thing, and it has been a thing for many years. And in fact, on anything on the budget, you know, they want to increase military spending. But also, I think on the other hand, too, is I think we've always kind of stepped up and taken the responsibilities being the world power and being the world's police. And I think other countries kind of sit back and think, well, even if we don't – I'm not saying it's right, but if we don't pay, well, the U.S. will cover it. You know, like they're there. They're the ones that are going to do what they want anyways. And I think so a lot of times it's like anything else. If you're like, oh, I know I can go over budget for a show or whatever because I know that, you know, that they'll pay it back.
From a fair perspective, do you think that – the Trump administration's position on how other nations go about NATO are fair points to bring up to other nations, not necessarily in the way that he did it, because I think that doing it in that setting that he did,
exactly.
The speech, like,
I'm not sure that anybody has been shamed into handing over more money.
No, I think, again, I get that he's bringing
up... Not necessarily shaming, but the position of where the United States is in relation to other nations when it comes to spending in NATO. Do you think that's a fair a fair criticism from the Trump administration from the position of the United States?
I think it's fair in the sense if you're just looking at it on paper and you're seeing, okay, well, we're paying X amount and these countries aren't, I get it. I think it's the way that he handled it was not the way to handle it.
Right.
If you're going to bring the attention, you want to be able to get them to agree to it. But by bullying people and saying, not paying enough.
Yeah. Right. And he treated them as though they were doing something wrong.
Right.
When it's a guideline.
It's not a required thing. And treating them as lesser than, and again, putting it as like, we're telling you what to do kind of thing.
And then they
kind of
laughed at him.
They did, because it was...
Like, in the side, like, they were like, this guy's...
Nuts.
At which part was what was he saying in the moment when they did that?
He was saying
I saw that, but I didn't hear what he was saying when they were.
I think he was saying something like, you know, nations don't pay their fair share. You know, we all need to come together, pay our fair share. I don't think he wasn't singling out anybody in particular, but you could see the look on Macron's face, on Merkel's face, on Shinze's. Like, so you got these leaders standing there, like, is he really saying this? Like, that's why I felt it was like, is he really saying this right now? Is he really doing it? He's doing it. Okay. We'll just let that happen. There were some key differences with Trump and the other nations, though, that were really big focus of this G7 summit, which was climate change and trade. Because Trump made some statements on – we'll click to climate change in a second. But Trump made some statements on trade about Germany, about how he told the leaders of the European Union that Germans were bad for having a large trade surplus. Just for a trade surplus is an economic measure of positive balance of trade where a country's exports exceeds its imports. So basically they're sending a whole bunch of stuff to us and they're not taking any of our stuff. And Trump didn't like that.
What of our stuff do we want them to take?
Right.
What do we manufacture here?
Besides nothing that
weapons.
They want.
Right.
And I don't even know. What do they we don't manufacture anything here anymore. What do they want?
Supposed to now trade back for. I know.
Right.
And again, it's the way he handled it again.
Right.
That's not the way you do that to the largest economy in Europe
and
by now isolating them and calling them out on something.
And you don't say, oh, we're not, I'm going to stop imports of German cars to the United States.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You tell everybody at Beverly Hills, you know, you tell everybody
also that's not
Washington that.
That's not how it works.
That's
again.
Definitely not how it works.
As a silly, and again, as a businessman, to make a comment like that. It's one thing if you're running your own company, you're saying, I'm not going to buy the product from this vendor anymore.
But okay, that's a good thing. So some people out there who are Trump supporters may say, well, he's a president. Mm-hmm. Why can't he just say, no more German cars?
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I guess theoretically you could start saying that as a dictator, but you've got two other different branches of government. You have trade deals in place. You don't just say, we're not buying this anymore as of tomorrow. And there's probably already
contracts in place.
Of course.
That cover years long that we would be breaking.
And the funny thing is, a lot of the VW cars, for instance, have plants here in the United States. That part of their stuff is built here. And that goes back to NAFTA, where they have a plant in Mexico. They have a plant in Canada. They have one in Chattanooga. You know, it's like, they have stuff that things are being built in different places all over. So.
And that's the kind of stuff that we look at, and I think this is the fairest conversation that we've had when it comes to mm-hmm. Donald Trump. And I think you look at it and you go, well, you're just saying stuff, you're just throwing it, like you're just throwing spaghetti whatever at the want. Wall mm-hmm. to see what's going to stick, mm-hmm. because you're not thinking this stuff through. Like, I would have preferred, okay, to your point, it's what can Germans get in return for us? How do we make this a fairer trade deal? So now the Trump administration has to go back and say, here's what we've got.
I mean, can we export our sunshine? I mean, what really do you want from us?
You know, or
because maybe
or
if
how
we
many...
knew what other countries want, we could have an industry that actually built that stuff.
Or from a car perspective, how many Ford plants are in Germany?
Right.
Are parts being built
Where
in...
Where parts being built
yeah,
and how
in
much
Germany,
is the percentage?
It's kind of like... from a military perspective, where you're like, we have bases all over the place, but you will never see a base from another country.
Right, you won't see another base in the United States ever.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that goes back to us being the world police. It's like, again, that's why we're paying more, because we have bases everywhere.
Right.
Good point. And but nobody else has a base here. We don't have German bases here.
I would like to see the Trump administration say, if they're going to stick with this Germany line, say, I'm going to, here's what the United States can offer you. But at the same time, like, we're offering them protection.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do they need? You know what I'm saying? That's the trade.
I just think it's a dangerous precedent to do that and start bullying. And I know that's sort of his feeling, is like, that's how we got elected. That's who we, you know, it's America first. And he's going to be the bully and barrel through and tell everyone what they need to do for America. But in the real world and how that would actually transpire and work out, that's not the way it works. So it's disappointing to see him do that again to our European allies and yet be besties with the Russians and never say anything negative towards Russia, right, except when he's up in a corner. You know, those are the type of things where it's just you don't want to ruin those relationships. And it's sad, because now Merkel's basically like, well, we're kind of looking past the United States, and now we're going to focus on EU, and it's too unstable in the U.S.
Texted me that the other morning. He's like,
did you see what Angela Merkel just said?
Has just said that they can't rely on the U.S.
Right.
anymore.
Yeah, and that's sad to think about, that we've
here's what I thought. The Trump supporter thinks, yeah, that's a good thing. Germany, don't rely on us for all of this.
Trump said that during the campaign, mm-hmm. that other nations need to be responsible for their own X, Y, and Z.
So while we hear that and we're like, oh my goodness, this reduces our standing in the world, mm-hmm. I could see how Trump supporters might say, no, that's exactly what Trump wanted. Trump wants these other countries to be self-sufficient and stop depending on us mm-hmm. and making us pay for their stuff that they should be paying for. So I could see how, depending on your perspective, this is good news.
Right.
Well, yes, but on the other hand, it works against us, because, again, you can't have it both ways.
Right.
So you can't now think you can bring back jobs here to the U.S. and then you can still get the cars that you want and the capitalism being able to choose the products that you want and get at a certain rate, because some of the parts are being made in other parts of the world. Now you're paying for higher costs for that. So, you know, all that gets passed on to the consumer. So that's the thing that people always forget. It's the same thing with healthcare. It's the same thing with jobs. You bring those things back. If you want more health coverage, you're going to have to. You can't cut taxes and then expect that people are going to be able to have the health coverage. You can't bring jobs back to the U.S. and expect you're going to get those good deals at Walmart anymore, or you're going to be able to buy clothes or cars or other things at a lower rate if you're having everything done here. And it just doesn't work anymore. We're not in that kind of society. We're a global world, and that's already left.
The other side of that is, you know, say we're in some international conflict, you got to go back to Germany anyway. You got to go back to these people. But what I found interesting is that historically, Russia has always wanted to separate the United States from Germany. So this is like right in line mm-hmm. with what...
Wait, I did not know.
Yes,
they
wanted to put
the
wedge in.
Why?
Yes,
put the wedge, yeah.
Wait, somebody school me on mm-hmm. this.
Well, because, again, they want to kind of cut Germany off, because Germany's very powerful, especially in that part of the world. They're the biggest economy. They have the biggest influence in that sphere. And so Russia's trying to – wants to take over that side again like they used to have. And as you know, even going back to World War I and World War II, I mean, those same geopolitical issues are still simmering beneath the surface.
And I think you would have saw that had – Marine Le Pen won France, mm-hmm. that region would have just started to crumble. Russia would have got involved in the upcoming Germany elections.
Yeah.
So then you would have started to see big nations fall under this Russian helm.
Yeah.
And that would have been pretty. I mean, you already saw the United Kingdom already went through something that they're now regretting with Brexit, which I'm going to assume Russia had something to do. I mean, just anything bad, I'm just going to assume.
I sent you an article on it, and you did not read it, about this like military style mental psychological warfare that was put in place to cause Brexit and
Trump. I'm not surprised. I mean, yeah. But I mean,
and you were like, this thing looks way too long.
Oh yeah, it was long. I mean, it was worth it. I mean, I was like, how long is this?
Yeah, I send you stuff only if it's really, really freaking important.
I was like, give me the cliff notes.
Right.
Give me the. Break it down.
I want
like
Donald Trump. I want graphs and visuals
big, nice
bolded.
Graphs, right.
I'll do
and
that.
That's it.
It's so funny because every day, I mean, every time we have a show, I break down like in as simple as possible for us. Yeah, I need it in bullet form and notes so I can go.
That's how I do
it
too.
And bold it. I bold.
It knocked my. Well, I don't really wear socks all that often, but
if
I did,
it would knock them off.
Your socks off. Mm-hmm. The other big part about this weekend was the Paris Climate Agreement. So I feel like we've been talking about the Paris Climate Agreement for at least 2 or 3 years now.
Well, because that was a campaign promise
from Barack Obama.
Well,
it was a campaign promise for Barack Obama. Now Trump's campaign promise was to abandon
the
Paris Climate Agreement. United States was the only nation currently not to, and by currently I mean like he hasn't made a decision, not to endorse the climate agreement at the G7. Just to kind of give you guys the background on the Paris Climate Agreement, it aims to limit the rise of global temperature in this century. It also aids countries in adapting to the impacts of climate change. The agreement has been signed by 195 countries and ratified by 147.
Yep.
And Donald Trump said that when he was at the G7 that he would come back to make his decision when he came back.
Well, and at first he said he was going to make it before. So then when he went, he was going to have it. Then it was like he was going to make it afterwards. And now he's still debating. And the sad thing is, again, it puts America on the back of the rest of these countries. Now you have countries that are now ahead that are going to be signing up for this, and he's threatening to pull out from that.
I don't think we're going to pull out.
I don't think so either, because too many U.S. companies actually support it too. Right. And again, you cannot have a global economy and be the only one that's not going to be a part of that.
What's going on here is he wants his mark on it.
Mm-hmm.
So he is going to negotiate something that probably was already in there.
Yep.
Take credit for it.
Yeah.
That's what's going
on
here.
He also wants his supporters to feel like he's like making this thing like, oh, I'm not going to do this because I don't agree with it. Right. And then, like you said, he's going to come back and say, well, they made the concessions that I wanted, and so now I can sign it. And
but
it's
I just
ridiculous.
Don't think, and I don't think that the other nations at this point, based on the G7, based on Angela Merkel's statement, based on some of these countries that have already signed on, that they're just not going to go for that.
Nope.
I think you saw that. And because there were so many new leaders, I think four out of the seven leaders – this was their first time.
Yep.
Two of those people
like
were
Theresa
just
May.
Elected.
Like Theresa May.
Theresa May's been there. This is her 12th time. I'm sorry. Theresa May's her first time. Yes.
It's her first time as PM.
As Prime Minister. The Prime Minister of Italy. It's his first time. Emmanuel Macron. This is his first time. And Justin Trudeau. It was his first time.
First or second? I feel like he's been around longer, but it might be his first.
I think he just got elected last year. But Justin Trudeau and Emmanuel Macron met, and that like caused the internet to go crazy.
Yeah,
look at them standing over this beautiful background,
so young,
looking into the sea
and
vibrant. And,
yes, and then we have
and they wear
Trump
cool socks.
Yes,
Justin Trudeau wears cool socks. But yeah, these are the they're just
look at them. I mean, come on,
they are definitely the leaders to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if, you know, you could see that how I feel like I'm sure you guys saw the clip where Donald Trump like pushed that like.
Yes, it was infuriating.
You know, that prime minister
Montenegro,
out of the way.
Yeah.
And you're like, I feel like the other leaders just kind of left him. You know, yeah. when somebody like feels left out, they do something outrageous and yeah. they just kind of push their way to the front. Yeah. But like nobody was paying attention to Trump, so yeah. Trump made everybody kind of pay attention
exactly.
to him.
Exactly.
So he kind of pushed his way to the front.
Oh,
like,
God.
That's how I feel like.
And then his golf cart thing where everyone else is walking and now he's in the back on the golf cart. Can you imagine if that was Hillary Clinton, that how much they would be talking
Wait,
about
I
the low energy?
That.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
What?
So they were walking out in the
square
to go on whatever meeting or the next meeting. So everyone else is walking and there's Donald Trump in the back in a golf cart.
Yeah.
Being driven.
Oh.
Waving.
Yes.
Waving to
waving,
the crowd.
You know, Mr. Stamina there. Who,
yeah.
Hillary
Clinton's
Hillary Clinton
walking in shoes during in Chippewa over yeah. Memorial Day, and Donald Trump's waving from
always
the golf
talking
cart.
About the low stamina of Hillary, but yet he's in a golf cart while everyone else is walking
It's so
ahead of
American.
Him. I know.
Yes. So,
it is.
Really embarrassing.
It is yeah. so embarrassing.
It is a little embarrassing.
But the other cool thing is Ireland actually has a potential election this year to elect a prime minister, but also 38 years old, another young up and coming, and we're kind of seeing this now.
He's
in the
Asian.
World. And he's Asian, yes.
Of Ireland.
What?
Yes, in Ireland.
Yeah.
Yes. How cool is that?
Yeah.
And 38 years old, so it's really neat to see
What's
everyone
he
else.
About?
He's a looker.
He is. Another young, like a Macron
Justin
and,
Trudeau,
and
yeah.
Justin Trudeau, and in that same kind of vein, more of on the liberal bent. And it's really kind of historical if it happens to
right.
for very Catholic.
And I don't want to get.
I cannot believe.
But I'm just saying, it's really neat to see
Ireland
the world.
Could have a Chinese,
Indian, I think, Asian,
Asian Pacific.
Before
yeah.
the United States
Born
has
in
a woman
yeah.
president.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into like what's happening in 2020. But like, if we're going to be able to compete with a lot of these other nations
right.
that are electing young, vibrant
mm-hmm.
leaders, then the benches from not just the Democrats but the Republicans
Both.
Have got to come up with these young.
We do.
Vibrant
the,
leaders.
The baby boomer, you know, generation, it's like it's got to go. The first Donald Trump is the same age as Bill Clinton, who was first elected in 92. It's time for the next generation. I mean, he is now the oldest elected president behind Ronald Reagan by about 6 months. He's six
right.
months older. So it is time for something new. And again, that was part of the issues that came up during the election, is like Hillary Clinton and him are both.
Right.
And then we're talking about, you know, Joe Biden, and we're talking about,
yeah.
you know.
I mean, listen,
everyone's
in
their 70s, and it's time to look younger
right.
and youthful and,
we
the
need
next
to get
generation.
Back to, we need to get back to the Kennedy-esque,
it's,
the Obama-esque, like, young
right.
leader. I think there are some really great up-and-coming female leaders. You know,
Absolutely.
I was reading an article. Like I said, I don't want to get too
right.
too far after it. But Crystal Ball, who was on MSNBC, just launched this political action committee that's solely focused on emerging leaders in the flyover states.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it's separate from the DCCC,
mm-hmm.
but it's as it they want it to be in tandem with what the DCCC is doing. In finding leaders who are capable of being young progressive leaders in the flyover states to have that. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have Representative Sean Pecca Mahoney on from New York, and he's going to talk
right.
about his Adopt the District. And he's young, he's gay, you know, like those are the type of conversations.
Those are the people,
that
and that, and it's also the same thing. Not to get too far off track, but the same thing happened in California. We're having a changing of the guard too, because Jerry Brown's finally termed out at 2018. He's 80, and we have Dianne Feinstein. You know, we have Feinstein. We have people that are the old guard for the Democratic
it's
Party. They're in their
yeah.
80s and late 70s, and it's time to now even out here
yeah.
because this is sort of the heart of the modern progressive movement is here
right.
in California, and so we need to have the same.
And so, but that's going to be, but to your point, that's going to be really interesting for somebody like Antonio Vigila Rosa, who is a little bit older
mm-hmm.
than Gavin Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
Some there's a few other people that haven't announced
right.
yet, but like some of these other Diane, I just saw Diane Easton
mm-hmm.
The other day at a Stonewall meeting. You know, she's a little bit old, so like those guys are going to be competing with these younger people, and we're going to have Kevin DeLeon, who's a Senate Pro Tem, on
yeah.
In a few weeks.
That's great.
And he is
awesome.
Going to be running for lieutenant governor. So.
Or maybe governor. He's still kind of out
well,
there.
Well, from what I understand,
They've
emails have
there.
Gone out with Kevin DeLeon for lieutenant governor at
Lieutenant's
the bottom.
Lieutenant's like tiny LT,
like
and
bottom.
Then governor's huge.
Right. Speaking of the executive, the Trump budget came out last
mm-hmm.
week while Donald Trump was on this trip, so he could say some crazy stuff, so nobody
mm-hmm.
really understood that
mm-hmm.
the budget was coming out last week. So we kind of want to break down what that means for the country. So, Chelsea, explain just, I mean, briefly, because we were talking about, like, how money works right before we came on the show. And, like, so some people don't, like, we're going into the, from a federal government perspective, we're going into the fiscal year 2018. But how does that affect what goes on in 18, you know what I mean?
Is wow, it, I feel like I'm being asked a question that is above my pay grade.
Well, so looking at 2018, obviously the federal government has to function. I mean, ideally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. But the Trump budget has some things, and we're going to talk about like just some highlights of the Trump budget, programs that have been affected
highlights,
by it.
Lowlights.
Mm-hmm. Highlights, lowlights. Highlights, lowlights. Affected agencies. So the entire Trump budget is called, what do they call it? The
New Foundation for American Greatness.
Oh my God, it's like such propaganda. It's
yeah.
Like, oh
that's
my
exactly,
God.
That's actually what I got more out of the budget than the numbers. Mm-hmm. Was the propaganda that was infused yes. into it. It was almost like a propaganda piece with some yes. numbers in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's a new foundation of policies to produce new American jobs.
Right. and so let's just go over just some quick highlights of there's a section where they talk about sources of where they felt that based that they had to come up with a budget because of economic stagnation. So they talk about trade deals that have exported American jobs,
oh,
which
I can hardly listen to
crazy.
You talk about this. Mm-hmm.
Burdensome federal regulation, which has been a Republican idea. Burdensome permitting process, which I'm surprised got thrown in there because I'm like, okay, a lot of red tape. That's regulation,
yeah,
permitting
Trump
process,
doesn't
whatever.
Like how long it takes to build a building.
Right,
or to build his wall.
highest business taxes in the world, which I thought was really interesting because our corporate business corporates at 35%, and then with the states tacked on, it's like 38%, but the world sits at like 22% for businesses.
Yes.
The problem is that people do not understand how deductions and write-offs work,
right.
so that
right.
the effective
is different than the actual
is about.
I'm saying this strictly from the Trump
right.
budget, how they where they came up with their reasonings for
right.
this budget.
But I will say, if they did lower the business tax, it's better than trying to give a tax break to the rich if they're going to do tax cuts.
Although it feels like the same thing.
It is,
yeah.
But
because a lot of people are small business owners and they're rich and everything,
and
but I'm
other,
saying that would optically be better than
the other sources of economic stagnation was lowest business investment. So people are not investing in creating new businesses.
Yeah, because there's ginormous businesses that will put them out of business
yeah,
if they
what is
try.
Linda McMahon doing?
Exactly.
What
right.
is the small business administrator
the,
doing?
Anything that you and I try to do, Walmart, Target,
right.
anybody else, other people have already done it. So we can get about this big and they'll crush us because we have no competitive
Well, that's
advantage.
The thing, and that's anything with airlines right now. If you were to start an airline, how can you do that? When you see Virgin
right.
America, when you want to do a cable thing, you can't do that because you've got Comcast and Charter. When you want, you know, I'm not saying those are just big conglomerate
but
companies,
it's
but it's in that same
difficult.
Vein, like how to start, you know, like a Walmart.
And
or,
I hear a lot of libertarians say it's impossible to start a small business because of all the regulations. It's not the regulations. Mm-hmm. It's the big businesses that have
that
so monopolized industry that it makes it impossible for people to get in. It's partly
right.
because they have implemented or they have paid politicians
and
in a way
and they're
to
lobbyists
implement
that
regulations
mm-hmm.
that keep people from being able
and
to compete
favor
with them.
Their stuff.
So before,
and subsidies
but,
and all sorts
exactly.
of stuff that makes it impossible for newcomers to come into the game.
But before we get to the affected agency, I want to ask this question because you guys were just talking about small businesses in America. Can we say objectively that it is equal the consumer's fault when it comes to not supporting small businesses as it is the mm-hmm. corporation's fault?
Sure.
So, for example...
A little both. It's very difficult. How much research is it going to take for me to find some folders from a folder store?
Right.
Then if I just... I've been inundated with ads
with
from...
Staples.
Yeah, right. So you just...
Right. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, I could just go to Target and pick up the folders
right.
and I could
toilet
get some
paper,
toilet paper
and some bananas.
And I don't have to go
and a bathing suit all at the same time.
And I bring that up because from a Black Lives Matter perspective. So mm-hmm. during the whole Black Lives Matter movement, not that it's not going on right now, mm-hmm. but it was black consumers need to be investing in black-owned businesses. But black consumers, African-American consumers, are not investing in black-owned businesses the mm-hmm. way that they should be. So there could be, if everybody invested
yeah.
properly,
yeah.
in the small business in their town, they wouldn't do that.
Well, although, it starts at the local level,
but
too.
But it's also hard because when a Walmart comes in, they squeeze out the little guy, and then there's more and more little guy there.
Or it's also the other side is if someone knows, okay, well, there's the mom and pop restaurant, let's just say, but then there's the McDonald's here, you know, or I'm not even saying that, or the big chain places, because sometimes McDonald's can be franchise owned or whatever, but there's a big chain restaurant there, but the family knows, okay, I know what I'm getting with this chain restaurant as opposed to the mom and pop restaurant. Right. I'm going to go eat dinner there or get my family dinner from there versus the...
It's the American mentality of easy way out.
Well, it's easy, but also they're familiar, so they know what to expect, where they may not know, and they're like, oh, I'm nervous about going to try this new place.
I'd love to have some small business owners on the show just to have a conversation. But affected agencies from this Trump budget, State Department down 31.5%, which is crazy to me.
Because that's diplomacy.
Yeah, that's like, I don't need this... $639 billion defense budget. If I've got some diplomats
out
there doing
their
thing.
Right. If you're good at negotiating, then you don't have to go to war.
Yeah.
And the State Department, that's what they do.
Yeah. Down to $37 billion.
Right.
The Environmental Protection Agency, a 31.4% decrease. Education, 13.5% decrease.
Horrible.
Because you're like,
why would you not want to invest in your citizens and their future?
Because they say that the federal government has no place in
and
schools.
I get that's the, but on paper, but why would you want to not help? We're losing out on competition again because now we have other countries that are stepping up in their education and educating children, and it's just making it worse and worse and worse for us. And it's really sad that you would not want to invest in your own citizenry.
I mean, I saw some other agencies that are interesting that were affected that have not been covered in the news. They want to privatize the FAA.
Yes.
So the agency that watches us when we're flying in the sky, they want to privatize that to a non-profit, non-governmental corporation beginning in 2021.
You know, look, Canada's done it, UK's done it, some other countries have done it, but the difference is our country has way more air traffic than those countries do, so it's easier for them to privatize. Because there's good and bad to it, but when it's all said and done, we need that. We have the busiest
the moment that you take the government out of the FAA and it becomes a private corporation, they're not bound by labor law. They're not bound by governmental rules where they have to abide by constitutional.
The FAA, they're the ones who. And NTSB, they head up the investigations into when things go wrong. So how will
we're just
not going to investigate those?
They're the busiest. We're the busiest airspace in the world. So that should be a non-starter. And I know this has come up in the past.
Right.
But realistically, that's a hard thing to do. Other countries have done it, and it can work, but not with our type of – it would be very, very difficult to do that. And especially by 2021, that's just almost next to impossible to be able to do that effectively.
Here's another one. Invest in law enforcement, which includes somehow tackling opioid epidemic. $103 million to maintain and expand fight against opioids and other illicit drugs. So this is one of those things where, that sounds great.
Right.
Let's battle the opioid epidemic. But when you put it into a law enforcement budget, you know that it's not there to really help people, but to arrest them.
More people.
And this is so frustrating because we already know this doesn't work. $103 million could do a lot of good for a lot of people who need the actual help.
And then there was one other thing that's been really irritating is the earthquake alert system. They want to cut the funding for that, and that's out here on the West Coast. And, of course, they don't care because they're all blue states. But in the big scheme of things, it's only about $10.5 million. And the problem is we've already spent money.
We could go ask that for Mar-a-Lago. We've already spent.
Exactly. Right. And the thing is that I get they're trying to cut budgets where they can because that's the Republican way.
It's just unreal.
But when you're talking about something that small and we've already wasted money now, if you're not going to cover it, to get these systems set up. And, again, we're falling behind countries like Mexico and Japan and other places that have much more advanced earthquake alert systems. And again, it's helping your own citizenry with having these advanced warnings to help protect people when the inevitable earthquake happens in a populated area here on the West Coast. And it's, again, stupid. And it's the same thing that happened with Hurricane Andrew back in the 90s. You know, there was no real good funding. It takes that one big hurricane, and everyone's like, oh, shoot, now we've got to pay tons of money. So and the government has to come in and spend billions of dollars because the insurance didn't adequately cover people. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing that's going to happen when, God forbid, an earthquake happens and they don't have the advance. Now we're going to be spending billions that we might have been able to save here and there because it gave people warning, and more lives are going to be lost or more people are going to be hurt because we don't have this minute system, which in the big scheme of things, $10.5 million is pocket change to the government's finances. So it's silly stuff that they're focused on.
How about this one? Paid parental leave, 6 weeks using unemployment insurance system as base to establish for states to establish programs.
Mm-hmm. Which is a Ivanka Trump pet project, mm-hmm. which is how
so
this
got
into the
budget. So
the
idea sounds really good. And then what do you think of it being based in the unemployment
system? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, the unemployment system already takes a long time. For anybody who's been on unemployment, it takes... There are so many loopholes that you have to go through. In New York, it's different than it is in California. Right. Like... The requirements are different, and the red tape that people have to go through is different. For me to be like, if I was a parent, for me to be like, oh shit, now I got to log in, I got to figure out how to get my paid parental, and I got to go through these
loopholes.
When
people need unemployment insurance, they find out a way to get it.
No, they do find out a way to get it. I'm saying, like, now you've got just another system that people have to go through to get.
You're saying it's just that it's going to be different per states, but it brings back a point because, you know, the unemployment, we borrowed in California a lot of federal money, and now the federal government's basically saying you need to help pay that money back for the unemployment, and they're talking about what are we going to do, reduce unemployment benefits for Californians now? What is the system going to be? Is it going to be cut? And it's sort of the same thing that I envisioned would be happening with this parental leave, is that somehow if it's not kept up enough that now those benefits are going to be cut, or it's going to be worse if it's put into a state-by-state
setup. It's also from a business perspective, I would not think that it is incentivizing mm-hmm. for a company to be like, we're not going to give you paid parental leave. Like, that's not going to bring – it's not going to bring a job applicant.
It's not going to bring your best talent.
But people are so desperate for jobs that they're not going to decline a job offer.
I'm not saying that they would, but people who are in corporate – world,
right?
Like the people who are desperate for jobs right now aren't in the corporate world,
or they're not going to be
skilled enough to do that. Like I just can't imagine that businesses would say, like, would want one of their biggest incentives right now, because parents are, parents want that a part of their package, to have that now be government controlled, and now they've got to go through a system to get their paid parental leave. Like, that just doesn't seem like something businesses would be interested in.
Well, no, but I think businesses could add their own. That is
right. And on top of that,
yes, for their talent to retain them, they could say, well, we're doing 12 weeks or whatever.
Go ahead.
How about the budget proposes to restore the SEC accountability to the American taxpayer by eliminating the reserve fund created by Dodd-Frank?
Again, getting rid of anything with Dodd-Frank is always a cause of alarm for me.
That was like, wait, you restore SEC accountability mm-hmm. by eliminating part of Dodd-Frank?
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's the consumer
financial protection.
That's a different. That's a different.
Too. No, yes, but I mean, that's when they're trying to also gut in this budget.
I mean, at the beginning of the budget, it says, now that the American people, I got to scroll back
that's
up
right,
here.
Right here.
A new foundation of focus on the forgotten American worker who now has an advocate in the Oval Office. That is a quote.
It also says this 2018 budget lays the groundwork for an overdue renewal of the
American
spirit.
Okay, so in that effort, this budget is going to restructure the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And by the word restructure, that should trigger in your brain, mm-hmm. call, and you now imagine cut funding to.
Eliminate.
That mm-hmm. is what restructure means.
Yeah.
To ensure appropriate congressional oversight and to refocus the efforts on enforcing the law rather than impeding free commerce. Because when the CPFB went after Wells Fargo mm-hmm. for creating all of these accounts that their customers had not opened and credit card accounts that the customers had not opened, that was in order to impede commerce and not to enforce the law.
Right.
This is somebody is smoking something very dangerous, who says at the top, this is for the forgotten worker, and then says, we're cutting the CPFB.
Right, which is, has been such a good advocate for the American consumer across the board, with, like you said, credit card issues and fraud and companies taking advantage of the – that's the whole point of that. And to take that away is, again, putting big business ahead of –
Yeah,
I want to touch on some because we're talking about areas that affect companies, mm-hmm. but when it comes to affecting actual families, not that what happens to a company doesn't necessarily right. trickle down and happen to a family in a negative effect, but Medicaid, $610 billion over mm-hmm, 10 years, mm-hmm. food stamps, down $193 billion, retirement benefits, down $77 billion over the next 10 years. Student loan forgiveness, right. down $76 billion. And we just threw up a graphic. I know we started up earlier. Down 29% food stamps. Mm-hmm. Welfare down 13% mm-hmm. because one of the new policies is of this budget is to reform the welfare, path towards welfare reform, which is how they've been, how Mick Mulvaney has gone out there and kind of touted this budget as welfare reform somehow. What did not get touched, though, in this budget, and maybe it was hidden somewhere, was the NEA. Mm-hmm. The one big thing that they did think Democrats aren't going to like, don't touch the NEA. Yeah. And then so the Trump administration can say, we didn't touch the NEA, but we're going to touch everything else. Exactly.
Well, and I think that also came across as...
National Endowment for the Arts.
Yes, but I think that also came across as a bipartisan thing of knowing that that was going to anger some of the constituents in some of the areas that Republicans had to deal with. And the good news with all this, too, is that Congress is going to have a say on how this is all going to be finalized anyway. So is not going to stand in its present form. So that's the only good news. This is what they wish and what they would want it to be.
Yes.
But it won't end up being in this form.
And to the point where Mitch McConnell said last week that he did not think that this Trump budget, as it was proposed, mm-hmm. could even make it to 50 votes in the Senate.
No, not at all.
Here's another one of my favorite pieces of propaganda. Abolish the death tax, which penalizes farmers and small business owners who want to pass their family mm-hmm. enterprises on to their children.
And that, talk about fake news right there. That is the biggest lie right there, because we know what the death tax is. $5 million.
It's
right.
Your
first $5 million.
Right. So that's a farmer who has more than $5 million to pass on.
I know. That's like a big...
If that's what they're making, I'm going to go into the... I'm going to become a farmer.
Farm. Yeah, I mean, that's a big business there.
That's big pharma, not big farm. Big farm, not big farm.
So again, that's, again, misleading.
Misleading, and that's putting it lightly.
The day-to-day American,
and
average
how about
American.
This? The budget proposes to reduce or end direct funding for international programs and organizations whose missions do not substantially advance U.S. foreign policy interests. So, helping cure disease doesn't advance our interests,
right.
We're taking our money.
So basically, like maybe somewhere in Africa,
like
you
nets.
Know, sort of like yes, which I know a lot of people were involved with the malaria thing, but also even George W. Bush, you know, used to do the AIDS and spent a lot of effort, which is a really great thing that he did with his organization in Africa to help reduce the AIDS epidemic there, and essentially that would theoretically ostensibly
so
be cut because
like
it's not going to directly affect the U.S.
Basically, this is a direct attack on like something like the Clinton Foundation.
George W. Bush's foundation.
Well,
here, the AIDS
if it does not advance, and when people say U.S. foreign policy, they mean the current administration. They don't necessarily mean.
And they mean the economy. So here's one thing, though. I do agree that in some of the things that we do in providing aid internationally, actually hinders other countries from being able to come up there. Like, for example, when we send over all of our old clothes and stuff to get rid of there, how is a clothing store, a clothing manufacturer, a clothing store supposed to do any business if we flood their country with a bunch of our old stuff?
Right.
So some of this international aid that we have provided has backfired. I saw a great documentary on it called, is it like Charity Inc. or something like that?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
So I understand that some of the aid that we provide is not helpful. It actually backfires. But for the standard to be that does not substantially advance U.S. foreign policy interests, and the only U.S. foreign policy interest really that Trump has is improving our economy and killing terrorists. Mm-hmm. And so unless money does that, they don't care. And I
or any of his business interests, of course, overseas.
Sorry, yeah, of course. So it's just, man, that is not going to do anything good for us karmically.
Well, it's not going to do anything good for us in general. The other affected thing out of this budget is obviously healthcare. The CBO score came out last week, which we said we would talk about, which they said that by next year, 14 million people, mm-hmm. based on the budget, American Healthcare Act that was just passed in March by the House. It probably will not make it through the Senate. 14 million, we're going up, throwing up the graphic from NBC News. 14 million people would be off of healthcare by 2018. Mm-hmm. By 2020, there would be 21 more million people off of healthcare. And then by 2026, there would be 26 million. This isn't like 14 million plus, this is 14 million plus 21 million plus 26 million. Because based on what I...
Wait, where did we hear that the new number was 23 million? Whereas the first round was
24 million.
And then this one was 23.
Yes. And I think it was... I don't know where that... I'm just reading from the CBO, which would be 23 million more relief coverage by 2026.
Right. So that's total, though. It's saying basically 14 million, and then by it would be an additional 7 million, and an additional 5 million would lose it over the year.
37 million people... essentially without health care would reduce the federal it would only reduce the federal budget deficit by $119 billion over a decade, which is less than the $150 billion that was projected from the first time that they proposed the American Healthcare Act. So it's a little bit worse.
And you saw that Trump tweeted this morning, it should just be 51 senators that they should be
the second time he said that out loud.
And again, I don't understand. I get why he wants that to pass. I mean, I guess he doesn't care because he'll be long gone when the worst part happens. But the point is, yes, and I've said this to people before, yes, the young and healthy patients will have their rates go down. That is true. But the overall numbers of people paying more is going to be way greater than the people now paying less. Smaller group, more people are going to be paying more money out of pocket if you're older, if you're unhealthy, if you're, whatever those cases are.
I don't think Republicans want older people to die because then nobody would vote for them.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, when your biggest constituent, the AARP, is against it. And the other problem is, again, it comes down to simple math.
Right.
You're just moving money around. You're not actually solving the problem. You're giving tax breaks to the wealthy. You're letting the young and the healthy pay a little less, but then at the expense of everyone else. Is now going to pay some 100, 200, 300% higher, some even 800%.
Your logic is why it doesn't make sense that we allow all the money to go up to the top 0.1% of the... Your logic about you don't want to kill off your voting
pool... Oh, I'm talking about they don't want to kill off their voting
pool.
Yeah, right. I mean, same thing. It's the same thing of like, why do we want corporations to take all the money, suck dry the middle class, mm-hmm. and then have no customers? Right. It's the same problem here.
Well, Republicans don't necessarily generally make sense when they don't.
It's a short-term thinking.
It's a very short-term thinking.
How about this? Did you know that everyone believes in and supports safe food supplies and clean air and water? Mm-hmm. This is a quote from the budget. Everyone believes in mm-hmm. and supports safe food supplies and clean air and water, but the agencies of the federal government have gone way beyond what was originally intended by the Congress.
Wow, I didn't know it was in the Constitution.
The hallmark feature of these regulations has been a mind-numbing complexity that minimizes understanding.
That has Mick Mulvaney's, dripping Lucius Malfoy sounding
fingerprints all over it.
And you could see that. I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch Mick Mulvaney the budget director, the OMB director, his testimony last week. I mean, there were some, Bernie Sanders was hit. I mean, there were some Congress, he got hit all over the place. I can't remember her name. She's got that, you ever seen the...
Oh, yeah, she's like the goth...
Rosa DeLauro?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's from Connecticut.
Yeah. Yes.
Have you ever seen that movie Follow That Bird with Big Bird? And then, she's got... Okay, anyway.
She's awesome.
I'll have to pull that. I'll have to tweet that out.
Yeah, it was incredible.
But she went after him as much as she went after Betsy DeVos. Mick Mulvaney is... So when it comes to debt ceiling, because it came out today that... The Trump administration wants to accelerate the timetable for the debt ceiling vote to happen. Instead of it happening in the fall, right. they want it to happen in...
And they
want to
raise it.
They want to happen. They want to raise it because now they get it. Now they somebody does.
Yeah.
In July, they want to do it in July instead of August.
Because they don't want to shut down the government and if it gets too close. Right. To
and
October
the one
1st.
Person who was against raising the debt ceiling when he was a congressman is now the director of the Office of Management and Budget, Mick Mulvaney. So it's going to be like Rand Paul and Mick Mulvaney and all these people versus like Paul Ryan, Mike Pence. And if there is one thing that will destroy the Republican Party, it is shit like this. It is this, what does they call this thing? The New Foundation for American Greatness and not raising the debt ceiling.
And then the government is shut down on October 1st.
And then Democrats are like, well, we're just going to go out and we're going to adopt a district and we're going to campaign a little bit.
Yeah, it's just, again, like you said, they're being very short-sighted because already demographics are not in their favor. They squeezed out a victory in 16 by a very weird mix of people with less of the majority.
Right.
And those demographics are changing. And again, why would you want to then take the people that are the older demographic that are going to be voting for you and give them a worst healthcare plan? It's beyond me. And why you want to cut from education and cut from things that affect your own citizens each and every day. Those are the things you don't want to deal with. But of course, you'll spend more for military spending. You'll take away from diplomatic means with State Department. But you know,
and what is the craziest thing about this, and the saddest part about this, and we've talked about it because we kind of understood this during the election, which was Republican. We've said it plenty of times. Republican voters from flyover states, southern states, typically always vote against their interest. Yep. And
I've heard a lot of people say that that's not when we think that, when we say that, we actually don't understand their interest. What the highest interest of them at the time when they're voting that way is.
Right.
And it might be one issue, and that's part of the thing too, is they're only voting on one issue, not the entire
package.
And
I think that is just based on that is the. And every week we probably say something, Democrats should be doing this. That is the message that Democrats should be taking,
absolutely.
Trying to figure out how to expand. We get that this is your one issue. Bernie Sanders' campaign for what's his name out of Montana?
Quist
last week.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a gun-loving Montanan. Nancy Pelosi came out and said, we need to be open to pro-life Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
The message has to be all-inclusive.
The tent needs to now, like you all talk about the Republican tent, that needs to be the same.
And Democrats have to be able to go into these flyover states, which we're talking about Crystal Ball's organization, and say, we understand that you are really focused on one issue. So let's talk about that one issue right now, and then let's talk about the other issues that are going to be affecting you. And they got to be able to have that message. It's got to come from Tom Perez. It's got to come from Keith Ellison. You know, it's got to come from the new Democrats that are going to be running in 2020 to say, let's talk about all the issues at one time instead of focusing on this one issue at a time. I think Hillary Clinton tried to do that a little bit during the general election, which was nobody could understand what Hillary Clinton was talking about because she was talking about too many things at one time, whereas Donald Trump was saying, you know, national defense, Hillary Clinton spread – in our mind, we're like, that's great because we can understand everything. But it was whereas people should understand that.
I think there's two sides to it, though. I think progressive standards do work if they're explained in a way, like you said, that it's like a Trump thing where you just – but I also think, like you said, there are regional places where
– it's just not going
to
work.
Like the Joe Manchins of West Virginia. You know, you're not going to be able to have the same type of progressive Democrat like you can have in San Francisco that you're going to have as a senator of West Virginia.
Right.
And you do have to tailor it to some degree to be able to attract those moderates or to attract those people that are Republican but more on the moderate side that might feel like, okay, I can cross over to vote for this Democrat because they're speaking to me. And that does start with the messaging. And that's what we, as on the progressive side, do have an issue with now is messaging that out and having the candidate that's going to speak that to
the
where
point
people understand.
To your West Virginia point, and this is just as an example we've talked about before, where West Virginians, West Virginians, Kentuckians, when it comes to coal country, how do you explain to people, you know, there was something in the budget that talked about support the highest priority biomedical development and research. There was something that I was like, I can't remember what it was, but it was, how do you explain to people that automation is what's taking away their jobs in a way that makes them understand?
Right.
How do you explain to coal country that my plan is to get you out of the coal mines because it's killing you?
Right.
So for example, Hillary Clinton had the plan that said, you know, we're going to teach you new jobs. But that did not stick with people. How do you get a policy plan to say, we don't want you to lose your job right now. You're not going to lose your job immediately, but we're going to wane you off the job that you have right now. We're going to pay for you to be able to go back to some technical school to get a different schooling, so to get you out of the coal mine so it's not killing you and your family.
Because that emotionally doesn't feel like the safe thing.
It doesn't.
Emotionally, people just want to go back to what's safe and secure and comfortable in their mind, even though they know that that job is killing them.
Right. That's what they've worked at. That's what their father worked at and their grandfather, and that's all they know. And to say you're taking away from them is, again, sounding like big government's now taking this job away from you.
And, as I often cite, the Bernie Town Hall in West Virginia, when they asked the coal miners, you realize that coal is on its way out. And they're like, yes, we know. Mm-hmm. It's been on its way out for 30-some-odd years. It's just that we just, you know, don't know what else we would do.
Right, and that's all we know.
And he spoke to us. So Hillary had it as like, you know, if your industry is leaving, we'll, you know, get you a new manufacturing job. But it didn't speak to coal miners specifically, and these people wanted to
somebody
be spoken
to
specifically, who understood their plight and who said that they
were going to help. Exactly, that was the same thing that was happening in Ohio in the manufacturing jobs, and there was a great write-up in the LA Times a couple months ago, too, about three different generations and also, like, on the Mexican side, what was happening when the plant opened there with their job prospects versus the person that had been working and getting the benefits and watching that go away in Ohio. And again, it was the same thing, and that's why Trump was able to get a win there after Obama won there twice back-to-back, because it was the same thing that didn't feel like that Democrats were speaking to them about the manufacturing jobs that were disappearing in Ohio and how that what were going to be the new jobs that are going to take their place. Same thing with construction workers now. That used to be a really great job, benefits and unionized. Now that's gone away, and now they're getting paid half of what they were getting paid back in 1980 for construction jobs. So it's the same stuff that's been happening again over many, many years. This is not something that just happened under Obama. This has been happening for 35, 40 years, which actually goes back to Ronald Reagan's time when they, you know, started to do tax cuts and outsourcing and everything else. It's where it all began in the early 80s after all the issues that we had in the 70s. So it's been a long-going thing, but you're right. It's like the messaging needs to be done in a way that speaks to the individual people that are being affected.
It's like marketing 101. Mm-hmm. If you have a product that's for everybody, nobody will buy it.
Exactly.
But it has to be like, look at my product. This is for guys with red shirts and blue eyes.
Yes.
Now you're listening.
Now we understand, and you're connecting with that person. And that's where we have to do that as we start getting into the campaigns, into the midterms of 18 and the special elections, which, by the way, today is the first early vote, in-person early voting day for Georgia 6th.
Oh,
so it's starting today.
Ossoff coming.
And when's the last
It's June 20th.
Day.
June 20th, yeah.
Is the election.
And I think he's ahead.
Ahead. And,
like by one percentage point?
It's actually gone up, but it depends on the poll. Some have him up as high as 6. And then, you know, of course, we have the special elections this year. We have the gubernatorial primaries coming up for both Virginia and New Jersey, which are sort of the bellwethers, which we had
in
2009.
It's getting nasty in Virginia.
What do you make of Montana?
I don't take that as an anomaly, because it's a state that has sent that lone congressman as a Republican since the 90s. The body slam incident happened too close to after all the votes had been put in.
People wanted to make it mean something that they allowed the candidate to body slam a reporter, and it legitimizes violence.
No, because
except
it was
that so many people had
75% of
that.
People had already voted.
Right. Yeah.
It was too late. If it had happened maybe 2 weeks before, it could have maybe had an effect. But it really doesn't mean anything. The Republicans spent tons of money.
They spent like $5
million. Way more than the Democrats did, because the Democrats are like, this is a race that doesn't, you know, it's already trending Republican. Montana's a quirky state, though, because they have a Democratic governor. They have a Democratic senator. Their Democratic governor just won re-election, actually, against Gianforte back in November. So it's a quirky state, but the lone congressional district has been Republican since Bill Clinton was in office. So. Yeah.
Not, I mean, it's
you can't really put any meaning on it. I think more of the meaning should be put on Georgia 6. Because, again, all these states so far, Kansas, if you were to look at the meeting, it's a lot closer. If you were to look at Kansas versus November when it was 31 points, it was only 7 points in a very red, red state. The big challenge will be Georgia. How close is that going to be? Can a Democrat pull off the district that was Newt Gingrich's?
Right.
Those are the ones that are going to be
challenged. Tom Price.
And Tom Price, exactly. What's going to happen with the statewide elections? That's going to be a key barometer in New Jersey for the governorship, in Virginia. Because in 2009, those flipped to Republican.
And to your point, like I've had lots of conversations and I've seen lots of conversations with people online where they talk about why Democrats keep losing. I'm like, the marathon is how close are we getting in these these different elections?
These special elections.
Where messaging, we were hopeless before. Right,
the messaging is getting like we're talking about messaging like where we think they can where we think our national candidates can be better. Mm-hmm. But the messaging is working in these smaller elections because we've figured out the ground game a little bit better.
Yeah, if you were to look at the numbers, you're seeing a tightening that should alarm Republicans if they're looking at the bigger picture.
Which is why Mike Pence is going on a summer tour this summer.
Because those numbers are tightening, and from 31 points to 7 in Kansas, from 20-something points that Trump won to single digits in this past week. But again, I don't look at this as being anything out of the ordinary or condoning violence or anything else. It was too close to the end of when the majority of people voted, and, you know, it is what it is. The big thing will be, yes, if we don't pick up seats in 18, if we don't pick up governorships and statewide elections in 18 when 39 states are going to be voting, then you're going to see an issue with the Democratic Party. Right now, I would say we're on a good trajectory right now, and it's normal for what happens during presidential years when one party has the power. It's pretty typical.
Yeah.
Nothing
out of
the ordinary.
Well, listen, Scott, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I always learn so much when
I'm on
a show with you.
I do, too. I'm like, we didn't get a chance to talk about new drug price proposals, so we'll talk about that next week. Because you're welcome to come back next week.
That's a bipartisan thing. I'll be out of town though. Unfortunately.
There are some proposals that the New York Times looked at with some bills from some of the senators and representatives. Like we said, we've got a couple of guests coming up over the next month. Representative Sean Patrick Maloney from New York will be on the phone to talk about his Adopt a District program, and we'll probably talk to him about some other stuff, whatever's happening in the news that day. And Senate Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon, the Democrat from California, will be on the show this month as well, so be looking out for those dates. This coming month. Like we said, he is possibly a candidate for lieutenant governor or possibly governor. I thought he'd run for Feinstein's seat, but it looks like he wants to stay in California politics.
Who knows if she's going to run again or not?
I don't think she will. I think that they're making the way for like an Adam Schiff if they need to.
Well, I think so too. And as we said, if she was to run again, she'd be 91 by the time she left.
Yeah, well, we don't need 91. I like to have it in 91. Chelsea, where can they find you on the Twitter?
On the Twitter. At Chelsea Galicia.
Scott, where can they find you on the Twitter?
You can find me at SMAN80. That's SMAN80.
And you can find these guys on the Trump Report every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, right after this show normally.
On
but they
after
did
buzz.
Have
we
a
after
buzz.
Today.
They did preempt us today. Lots coming up. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was really high. It's like a helium high.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.